Greetings, greetings once again, and welcome aboard, one and all. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right. We're back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Welcome back. It's a big Super Bowl Sunday, so we'll start out with some NFL news. A couple of sports hits. Very short, because we actually don't care about the Super Bowl. I had a friend who sent me an email. I think he posted something on Facebook about shielding the kids from the Katy Perry Halftime Act. There'll be no need to shield the kids here at the McBurney compound because we won't be watching the game and we won't be watching her. He also implied that she was somehow tied to the Illuminati and the New World Order. And I thought she was just another ignorant slut, but turns out she's part of the whole, that whole thing. Who would have thought it? But real quickly, I do want to talk about Richard Sherman. I'm not exactly sure who Richard Sherman is, but I know a lot of you people out there probably do. Apparently, he is a football player who will be appearing in the Super Bowl, who did appear in the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact, today. Seeing as I didn't watch, I have no idea. But I heard several conservative talk show hosts, as I ran out of Bible study tapes in my car, I'm so 1980s. I think they're on MP3s that I'm listening to. But I ran out. Because, well, Malachi is a short book. I didn't realize how short it was. So I ran out, and so I ended up back on talk radio. I know, like a junkie returning back. I couldn't stop myself. And I must have listened to 10 minutes of Sean Hannity discussing the fact that Richard Sherman's girlfriend is apparently 9 months pregnant. And there was some question as to whether or not he would play in the big game. Or if his girlfriend were to go into labor, would he go to the hospital and be with her as she delivered their first child? And they went on and talked, and people called in and talked about it for, I listened for about 10 minutes. Never did I hear anyone ever suggest anything about the fact that this guy had impregnated his girlfriend and was shacking up and fornicating. Well, I didn't expect to hear the word fornicate, but I expected that someone could even bring it up. But no, they were concerned and they were debating whether or not he should be at the game or be in the hospital. Well, if he didn't even marry the mother, what are the odds he's going to show up at the hospital? Okay? I'm assuming he'll be at the game, maybe with another woman afterward. Who knows, right? But nobody's allowed to bring this stuff up anymore. What else did I have on football? I had something else here on football. Oh, yes, yes. Ah, now, earlier in the week, I had planned to open this show by asking the NFL to please offer Mitt Romney the job of NFL commissioner, seeing as the current commissioner is somewhat unpopular and is having some political difficulties. The perfect solution for everyone would be for the NFL to offer Mitt Romney the commissioner's job and spare us another presidential campaign, another losing a presidential campaign. And so, but before I could do this, Mitt Romney announced that he's not running. Even though he said he knows he could win, he knows he could raise the money, he knows he would be a good president, he claims now that he's not running. And my guess is that he is, in fact, my prediction is that Mitt Romney is actively in discussions with the NFL to become the new NFL commissioner. You know, he's a turnaround artist and all that. And I think the job of NFL commissioner is perfect for Mitt Romney. I think it'd be wonderful for everyone involved. So I want to encourage Mitt and whoever the commissioner is over there, or the commission. Who's the commissioner at the NFL? Paul Tagliabue, is that it? He asked. His extremely attractive audio engineer, and she had no idea. I really don't know who it is either, but I know he's he's in trouble for, well, he let the one player smack his girlfriend around and all of that. So, yeah, Mitt Romney, perfect. Forget running for president, Mitt. You should be the commissioner. Let's launch a hashtag campaign. Hashtag Commissioner Mitt. Not really. I don't know how to launch a hashtag. I don't know how to do that. I'm still listening to tapes in my car. All right, now, I want to also, because we've had a monumental death occur over there in Saudi Arabia. Yes. King Ben al-Faisal al-Palas al-Muhammad al-Fa'ud al-Saud has died. He was the king. Yeah, that's his name. That's close. That's the closest English transliteration I was able to come up with. Anyway, King Saud is dead, and he's been replaced by another guy. And I just want to remind you people that Saudi Arabia's flag, have you seen Saudi Arabia's flag? Right? It's green with the scribbles and the big giant scimitar at the bottom. Well, I had to look this up to make sure I was right. And sure enough, over at thefederalist.com, where they did a story about how Obama went over to the Middle East and was bowing to all the Middle Eastern leaders yet again. But buried in the midst of that story was the little factoid that I was looking for. The Saudi Arabian flag features an inscription. All that scribbling that you see, it's an inscription of the Islamic creed. There is no God but Allah! And Muhammad is the messenger of God. It also could be read, there is no God but Allah. And Muhammad is the prophet. Right? That's the Islamic creed. And that is what is on the Saudi Arabian national flag. Now, there are allies. And they have the same tagline on their flag as ISIS does on their flag. It's the same thing. Now, the Saudi Arabian version is a little more stylized. It is underlined by that giant scimitar. Well, that's a sword for all of you public school graduates. It's a sword. That's what they used to chop off infidels' heads. Yeah. So Saudi Arabia, our ally in the war on terror, has the same statement on its flag as ISIS. It's the same flag, just more stylized, you know. Looks a little less like a pirate flag and more like the typical third world cartoon flag. Have you noticed how all the flags of all the other countries kind of look silly? I mean, the United States, we got a great flag. Britain, that's a pretty cool flag. Japan even has a pretty cool flag. I mean, it looks like they're a real country. But everyone else, it just looks like, cartoons.
Japanese?
Yeah, the Japanese with the big red dot. I like when they had the dot with the rays, you know, the rising sun. That was a cool flag. Yeah, that was a cool flag. But all the other flags, they look like a third world cartoon flags, and so does Saudi Arabia's, and it says there's no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet, and there's a scimitar up there, just in case you're not sure where our wonderful allies are coming from there in the Middle East. So there, I've reminded people that we are allied with Saudi Arabia and their new king. Okay. So we're going to stay in the war file for quite a while this week because, once again, we have another beheading video. The Islamic State, according to the Jerusalem Post, beheaded Japanese hostage Kenji Goto in a video that they released on Saturday night. And you'll remember that the Islamic State had asked Jordan to negotiate a prisoner exchange with a female terrorist. There's a female terrorist in Jordan. She's been on death row for 9 years, indicted, convicted for a 2005 suicide attack that killed 60 people in Amman, Jordan. Her bomb didn't go off. That's the only reason that she wasn't blown up to Allah or down to Allah. Yes. Anyway. The Jordanians were apparently willing to negotiate, but just as I suspected, all three of the hostages, the Jordanian pilot and the two Japanese nationals, they were already dead. Now, I will not be surprised if we find out that these prisoners that are being paraded on their knees in the orange jumpsuits, I will not be surprised if we learn in the future that these prisoners are not allowing their captors to chop off their heads on camera. They're fighting back. They're forcing the terrorists to kill them. before they can behead them alive on videotape. I mean, how could you possibly get on your knees in, you know, knowing what's going to happen? I mean, why not fight? And so I think they are fighting, and I also think that the Islamic State killed these prisoners before they made the demand to Jordan, because they weren't able to prove to Jordan that their pilot was still alive. But that's not a very bold prediction. But just the idea that the beheading video is released on Saturday, and on all the major news websites, it's below the fold. It's 5-6 stories deep before you get to the beheading video. And we're just becoming somewhat used to these beheading videos, and that's a sad state of affairs for humanity in general. Back to Saudi Arabia in the war file. The Free Beacon reports that King Salman, Saudi Arabia's newly crowned monarch, has a history of helping to fund radical terror groups and has maintained ties with several anti-Semitic Muslim clerics. Yes, in 2001, an international raid on the Saudi High Commission for Aid to Bosnia, which the new president, the new king, Salman, founded. He founded this outfit, the High Commission for Aid to Bosnia there in Saudi Arabia. A raid there unearthed evidence of terrorist plots against America. Salman is further accused by Robert Baer, a CIA officer, of having personally approved all important appointments and spending at the International Islamic Relief Organization. It's a Saudi charity that has been sanctioned for providing material support to Al-Qaeda in the September 11th attacks. And yes, 17 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. What else on this new king of Saudi Arabia? Salman has also worked closely with radical Muslim cleric Salah al-Mughamzi. Yeah, and here's a quote, a tweet from Salah, who's a friend of Salman. He tweeted once, "Allah only gathered Jews in the land of Palestine to destroy them." And he also said in 2012, "Osama bin Laden died with more sanctity and honor than any infidel or non-Muslim." That's a friend of our new ally, King of Saudi Arabia. Anyway, just to point that out, why do we have to be friends with such low-life terrorist scum? It's like it's a Faustian bargain. It's a deal with the devil. We shouldn't be dealing with the devil. And Saudi Arabia, I believe that the devil, if he is embodied on earth, He probably chooses to dwell in Saudi Arabia. Just my guess. If he's able to dwell anywhere. Now, let's more from the war file. This intersects with the politics file. Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters is accusing the White House of basically trying to whitewash the terrorist trade for Bo Bergdahl, and basically trying to whitewash the fact that Bergdahl deserted. The White House is trying to avoid an Article 32 or a court-martial because they just don't want it to come out that they traded 5 terrorist generals for a deserter. Ralph Peters, Lieutenant Colonel, says the White House, nobody at the White House understands why this is a big deal to people who serve in the military. And he says they're pressuring the Army to whitewash it. He says if you let Bergdahl walk, it's not about this pathetic little creep, Bergdahl. It's about the principle. You make it virtually impossible to prosecute future deserters. And I think that's totally fine with Valerie Jarrett and the other, how many women of the apocalypse, the four horse women of the apocalypse up there who are running the country? Yes, I think it's totally fine with them. Samantha Power, yes. And her vice president, Barack Obama, I think they're fine with that. The lieutenant colonel says so far you've got some generals that are showing some backbone, saying no. They're telling the Obama administration that for the good of the military, Bergdahl has to go through an Article 32 and into a court-martial, as a matter of fact. But the White House is actively fighting any efforts to prosecute Bo Bergdahl. It would make them look bad. Plus, it would derail their ultimate goal of weakening the United States military as much as possible. That's what Valerie and Samantha and the other girls are up to up there. Now, in a related story, the Washington, CNN is reporting, this is CNN, one of the five Taliban detainees released in return for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl has attempted to return to military activity by making contact with Taliban associates in Afghanistan. And this, apparently, according to CNN, has led to a debate inside the administration about whether there's new threats from this man and potentially maybe even the other four. They're debating this. Really? You think five Taliban generals, you think there could be maybe a threat? Possibly? Let's start a working group, and we'll have a discussion. We'll get some feedback, and we'll share. Well, according to the CNN report, some elements of the intelligence community believe that the information about this particular terrorist is strong enough to classify the man as being confirmed for returning to, well, illegal activities, terrorist activities against America. Obama says not to worry. He says he received assurances from the Qatari government about the five detainees before they're released. So Barry, I mean, he looks up from his driver and he's like, what? Don't worry. I have assurances from our good friends in Qatar. Oh, don't worry, says Barry. And Secretary of State John Kerry says he's comfortable that the risk has been mitigated through these assurances that were received from the emir of Qatar. Well, if someone has emir before their name, I wouldn't trust any of their assurances. That's for sure. By the way, just as a note, a report back in September 2014 showed that about 17% of the detainees transferred out of Guantanamo Bay are confirmed to have returned to military activity, and another 12% are in the suspected category. So we just can't find them. They may have a towel wrapped around their face, and they're running through the desert with an AK-47, or they may be in the subway in New York. Or they may have bought tickets to the Super Bowl. We just don't know where they are. So about 25% of these terrorists that we're releasing from Guantanamo go south, and Barry says he's got assurances? I think I've got an assurance in that this is going to come back to bite us at some point in the not-too-distant future. One of the men that Barack Obama let go is going to carry out some sort of terrorist attack. And I am your host, Doug McBurney, still in the war file. Oh, yeah, that's the problem with the terrorists from Guantanamo Bay. They're still alive. They shouldn't be alive. They should have been interviewed and summarily executed after obtaining whatever information we could from them in a very short amount of time, and then they should have been killed. But instead, Barry is hell-bent on closing Guantanamo Bay and putting us all in danger from the Islamo-fanatic fascist Nazi head choppers, who he seems to be comfortable with. Meanwhile, we go to Raul Castro. You'll remember a few weeks ago that Barry announced that everything was love and sugar between the United States and Cuba, and that we were on the verge, I think, of opening a Hilton down there. Yeah, I think. A resort, right. Well, in Costa Rica, Raul Castro made a speech where he demanded that the United States return the U.S. base at Guantanamo Bay, lift the trade embargo, and compensate his country for damages before the two nations can reestablish normal relations. Now, Barry implied that we had already pretty much restored everything. Everything was good and happy. And they were going to hold hands and maybe even kiss each other. Maybe even get married. I mean, Barry's a big supporter of homosexual marriage. Maybe him and Raul were going to tie the knot. That's how close I thought they were. But Raul seems to have gotten cold feet. Yes, it was back in December 17th that they announced that they were engaged, but apparently the wedding is off. Obama says, according to this story from the Associated Press, Obama says removing barriers to travel, remittances, and exports supports the United States' unaltered goal, said Barry, of reforming Cuba's political system. But in Raul Castro's speech down in San Jose, Costa Rica, he said Cuba welcomes all these measures that his good friend Barry is taking, but he has no intentions of changing its system. And so just as we thought, Barry has surrendered to the Cubans. Yes, he may sign Florida over to them. We'll have to keep... Yeah, after he empties Guantanamo Bay of all the terrorists and sends them all to Michigan and, or wherever he's going to send them, get assurances from the mayor up there. Once it's empty, maybe he gives the base back so that Raul Castro will go on ahead with the wedding after all. Just a sad and embarrassing diplomatic defeat at the hands of our leader, Barack Hussein Obama. More from the war file? It just never ends. Well, this has been a busy week in the long war against all that is good and righteous and just being carried out by evil, wicked men who hate God and want to kill people and take their stuff. And head and shoulders above many in that department is the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood, should I say Muslim Brotherhood? The Muslim Brotherhood sent a delegation to the State Department in Washington, D.C. Actually, they were invited, as a matter of fact. According to the Free Beacon, the United States State Department hosted a delegation of Muslim Brotherhood-aligned leaders. Aligned, yeah. Well, if you're aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood, you are the Muslim Brotherhood. That's the McBurney Doctrine. If you are aligned with the terrorists, you are a terrorist. Well, I like how the State Department put out their press release saying that the State Department hosted a delegation because nobody has to take responsibility for actually serving them tea and crumpets, whatever. Yeah. Nobody in particular, just the State Department as a whole, hosted the Muslim Brotherhood as a whole. And they were meeting, apparently, up there at the State Department about their efforts to oppose the Egyptian president, al-Sisi, in Egypt. So there's one thing that Barry agrees with the Muslim Brotherhood on. Well, there's probably several things, but one of the obvious ones is he hates the fact that Barry hates the fact that he managed to get a Muslim Brotherhood guy elected over there in Egypt, and the military threw him out in a coup. That was Mohamed Morsi, you remember that? Yeah. And they're very upset about that, and they're willing to sit down and meet with terrorists as to how to strategize against al-Sisi over in Egypt. One member of the delegation right there at the State Department on camera held up the Islamic group's notorious four-fingered Rabia symbol. That's their symbol for chopping off the heads of infidels, their four-fingered salute there. He did it right there in the State Department. let's see. The Muslim Brotherhood says that they had fruitful talks with the State Department. Says that the State Department expresses an openness to engagement with Barack's cousins there at the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, that's I know. It's pretty bad when Barry won't invite the Israeli leader, Benjamin Netanyahu. He has to sneak in, like, you know, who's that orange-skinned drunk with the Republicans, the Speaker of the House? I can't remember his name. John Boehner has to sneak Bibi Netanyahu in through the back door over at the House. Meanwhile, the Muslim Brotherhood walks right through the front door at Foggy Bottom and sits down with the State Department officials, unnamed State Department officials. Well, that's just shocking. Hey, here's something else that's very disturbing. Apparently, Iran has sent a warning to Israel through the United States over the recent killing that we reported on here of that Iranian general up there in the Golan Heights where the Israelis dropped a bomb on him and a number of his friends who were plotting terrorist attacks against Israel. Well, what shocks me about this story, I understand that Iran is upset that Israel blew up their general. That's predictable. But the fact that Iran has a back channel to Israel through the United States is a little bit disturbing. The fact that we seem to be in better, our government seems to be in better communications with Iran, than with the Prime Minister of Israel. It just strikes me as disturbing. Forgive me, but I'm bothered by that. The message that the Iranians sent it's from the Deputy Foreign Minister, Hossein Arimarid Babadollah Dalabadadayahan. That's the Iranian Foreign Minister. He says, we told the Americans that the leaders of the Zionist regime should await the consequences of their act. Allahu Akbar. All of that. And then the Iranians did fire a rocket on an Israeli military vehicle and did, in fact, kill two Israeli soldiers. The deputy foreign minister there in Iran, speaking through American agents to Israel, also said that the Zionist regime has crossed our red lines. Now, when these guys set red lines, they actually mean it. One thing you can at least say about the Muslim fanatics. Cross their red line, they'll chop your head off. Or they'll kill your soldiers. They're serious about red lines. Yeah. Iran delivered their message to U.S. officials via diplomatic channels. Not even back channels. These are like front channels. We're openly negotiating with Iran, basically capitulating on the whole nuclear issue. What are the odds that the Iranians detonate a nuclear device before Barry leaves office? I don't know. I mean, I thought the Iranians would have attained a nuclear bomb 2 or 3 years ago. But I guess it goes to show you how inept and backwards their third world, utterly corrupt pagan religion makes them unable to. And then there's the Jews sabotaging everything and blowing up their scientists on a regular basis. Thank heaven for that. I'm glad that while we negotiate with Iran, Mossad is targeting their top nuclear scientists and in some cases, shooting them off motorcycles with missiles. That's very impressive. And we want to thank Israel for that. Now, this past week marked the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz in Poland. And I have an article here from the French press agency. A number of elderly Holocaust survivors returned to the infamous Auschwitz-Birkenau death camp 70 years after its liberation to urge the world never to forget one of history's worst atrocities. The commemoration at the gates of the cold and austere camp, which was blanketed with snow, comes amid concerns over resurgence of anti-Semitism in Europe. So the reporter at a French press agency calls the gates of Auschwitz cold and austere. Austere. Yes, well, you know, we've been hearing a lot about austerity. And here, austerity has been linked to Auschwitz. I just want to point that out because the communists and the leftist fanatics in Greece and Spain are seeing an opportunity now to get out from under the austerity programs they've been put on, because they've been spending like drunken sailors for a generation. And as soon as you tell the people who are completely reliant on a welfare state that the welfare state is running out of money, look out for the fascists and the Nazis. And that's what I see happening in Greece and Spain. And it's just scary because they're marching against austerity, which really just means paying your bills. Yeah. If you're running out of dough, you can't keep spending at the same level, but they say no, and that's when the fascists tend to percolate to the top. But back to Auschwitz, 1.1 million people, nearly all of them Jews, were exterminated at Auschwitz in Poland. And AFP goes on to report that anti-Semitic attacks in France, home to Europe's largest Jewish population, doubled in 2014. Historical records show that by 1942, the Polish resistance provided Allied powers with eyewitness accounts of the Holocaust. But Washington and London failed to act against the six death camps that the Nazis had set up and occupied Poland. And there's a debate. The AFP reminds us that there's been a long debate as to why the Allies did not bomb the supply lines to Auschwitz. Why didn't they bomb? Why didn't they do something to stop the genocide? Well, I think neither side in World War II cared too much for the Jews. And I think in this current war, this current long war against Islamic fundamentalist terrorists, I think both sides still don't care too much for the Jews. Matter of fact, there are a number of the larger European Jewish organizations who are actually bringing up the subject again of, is it time for the Jews to flee Europe? It's bizarre. It's a bizarro world. To think that we could ever go back to that. But we can. In a generation, it can happen. And it is happening, I'm afraid. Final story from the war file. Is this the last one? Yes, the last story from the war file. The New York Times has reported that a drone crashed on the White House lawn this past week. And now White House officials describe it, according to the Times, as nothing more than a drunken misadventure by a government employee who apparently he was drunk and he tried to impress some girl that he had a drone. And he flew it right into the White House and crashed it on the lawn. But the New York Times notes that this does highlight vulnerability in the protective shield around the White House. Yeah. The small drone, operated by a drunken government worker, evaded White House radar. But the White House officials have characterized the drone as not dangerous. Well, I suppose they could classify this particular drone as not dangerous. But from what I understand, drones can be dangerous. And the fact that a drunken bureaucrat managed to evade all the White House security is a bit disturbing. Let's see. An on-duty officer at the White House spotted the drone flying near the residence on Monday but could not stop it. Yes. A spokesman for the Geospatial Intelligence Agency, where the drunken employee apparently worked, has confirmed that the Secret Service is questioning a government employee over this whole thing. Now, the spokesman said that the employee was drinking and he was off duty, and he was not involved in work related to drones or unmanned aerial vehicles in any special capacity at the geospatial. Okay, so this guy didn't even know anything about drones. He was just some drunk dude flying. Yeah. It's amazing to me that ISIS hasn't already taken the White House and flown their pirate flag over it. It just amazes me. It tells you how lucky we are that they are inept because they're a bunch of backwards pagans. Yeah, we're lucky that they're inept. Anyway, it will not surprise me if the White House is taken, for crying out loud. It's ridiculous. All right, now, let's move from politics and war and geopolitical machinations. Let's move quickly into the science, really, file. Yes, a story from the Associated Press boldly shouts from the headline that a prehistoric skull has been discovered, and it's a key piece of the puzzle in the story of humanity. Yes, scientists said last Wednesday that the upper part of a skull was unearthed at Manot Cave in Israel, and they insist that it is about 55,000 years old. Yes, and one paleontologist from Case Western Reserve University, a prestigious university there in Cleveland, said that this is the first direct fossil evidence that modern humans and Neanderthals inhabited the same area at the same time. And they go on to say, remember now that Neanderthals prospered across Europe and Asia from about 350,000 to 40,000 years ago, and they went extinct sometime after Homo sapiens arrived. And the writers at the AP, they just state that as a fact, right? Scientists say, in regards to this new skull, a key piece of the puzzle there, they say that the skull belonged to a woman, although several researchers disagree and insist it could be a man, and the scientists could not say definitively. And that's why this landed in the science, really, file. It's because they don't even know if it's a boy or a girl. But they're going to tell me it's 55,000 years old, and it's the key piece. I mean, just forgive my skepticism. I'm sorry. I ain't buying it. Just ridiculous. By the way, hasn't that been proven that Neanderthal and Homo sapien are the same? Wasn't Neanderthal just a thick-browed, heavy-foreheaded, just a guy, right? I've known guys like that. I think some of them are playing football today in the big game. If they found their skulls 1,000 years from now, they'd probably assume that they were Neanderthals. But they're not. They're just guys with big, thick brows. Didn't Jack Kuzo's book, right? No, didn't he prove? Anyway, I'll put a link up. You folks, you can judge for yourselves. But I thought the genetics pretty much prove that Neanderthals are people, that the case is closed. Neanderthals are not anything other than people. The missing link is, in fact, still missing. I was debating some heathen on the Facebook or something earlier in the week, and I reminded him that if a scientist discovered the missing link, he would immediately become the most famous scientist in the world, and the entire global media complex would not stop talking about it for a week if they ever found the missing link. And he said, no, you're wrong. He said, they find the missing link all the time, and it doesn't make the news because we've got so many of them. And I said, well, why is it still missing? Anyway, I'll link up to Jack Kuzo's interview and his book, and we'll let you decide. Oh, and that reminds me, the Question Evolution Project is on again this year. Question Evolution Day, as a matter of fact, is February 12th. Now, Question Evolution Day is pretty much every day here at the McBurney compound because we homeschool our kids. And our, let's see, how old is our oldest daughter? Is now 13 years old, right? She actually is studying the theory of evolution in detail over this past couple of weeks. So we're not afraid to let her know exactly what the theory of evolution lays out. You know, the whole thing. We want her to know, and we have a lot of fun with it. We do Question Evolution Day every day here at the McBurney compound. But you can participate actively. I will put a link up to the Question Evolution Project Facebook page so that you can all go on there and like it. And on Darwin's birthday, February 12th, we can all question evolution together. I'll be online all day that day just banging out debates against the heathens. I'm sure it'll be a fun day for all. That's what we do on Question Evolution Day. That's right. We engage the heretics and heathens online, and we embarrass them. And it's a lot of fun. Okay. And so, wait, we're checking. Okay, check the wires. Check the wire services. Yes. Confirmed? Yes. The missing link is still missing. Yes. Okay, so we'll move on. All right. Now we jump into the science, really, file. Yes. WorldNet Daily has taken to putting up short biographies of the fathers of the modern sciences, and I appreciate them doing that, although my pastor has compiled the ultimate list of the fathers of most of the modern physical scientists, modern physical sciences, the hard sciences, so to speak. And how many of them were Bible-believing, young earth creationists, and even Christians. Robert Boyle was featured this past week on WorldNet Daily. Robert Boyle was born January 25th, 1627. He made contributions in physics and chemistry, putting forward the idea that gases were made of tiny particles. Pretty smart guy. He discovered the basic law of gas dynamics, known as Boyle's Law, as a matter of fact. And that law states that if the volume of gas is decreased, the pressure increases proportionally. Boyle also defined the modern idea of an element. He introduced the litmus test to distinguish acids from bases and was the first to use the term chemical analysis. In 1660, Boyle and 11 other very smart guys in England formed the Royal Society in London to advance scientific experiments. Not only a father of modern chemistry, but a founder of the Royal Society. Boyle provided in his last will and testament, by the way, from 1691, he provided £50 for an annual salary to some learned divine or preaching minister to preach 8 sermons in the year for proving the Christian religion against notorious infidels, atheists, theists, pagans, Jews, and Mohammedans. Yes. And £50 was also good for any undertaking for propagating the Christian religion in foreign parts. So he was all about evangelizing not only the atheists, the theists, and the pagans, but also the Jews and the Muslims, that's what the Jews and Muslims need to get together. They need Jesus Christ. Boyle also spent large sums of money supporting missionary societies in the spread of Christianity in Asia. And Boyle wrote that all races of people, no matter how diverse, came from Adam and Eve. That's what he believed. He's one of the smartest guys who ever lived. He funded numerous translations of the Bible, particularly an Irish translation that the British didn't appreciate, apparently. And he wrote of the diverse truths of the Christian religion. He wrote about the last days and how the sinful world would find its way to ruin. He wrote about Noah's time and the flood. And Robert Boyle, founder of the Royal Society in London, also wrote of the destruction of the world by fire at the end of this age. It's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. And, yeah, I don't want to be there either, the whole destruction by fire at the end of this age. I choose not to participate. Thank you very much. And I appreciate Dr. Boyle reminding us of that. That's all true. Along with Boyle's Law and the litmus test. Very cool. All right, now we go from Robert Boyle. Again, we jump into the science. Really? File. A report from the Independent over in London asks the question, have we reached peak food? At peak food, I said, yes. So you remember all of the hullabaloo about peak oil back, well, I think it was around 2007, 2008, when the price of oil first spiked above $100, $150, $180, I forget, but gas was like $4 a gallon. It was crazy, and they talked about peak oil. Maybe we can no longer increase production, and now we're awash in an oil glut, and gas is $1.75 in Denver. Well, the liberals now, the psychopathic atheists who are afraid of everything, they now have asked, I'll just read from the article. The world has entered an era of peak food production, with an array of staples from corn and rice to wheat and chicken slowing in growth, with potentially disastrous consequences for feeding the planet. Oh, the sky is falling. Yes, now they say peak chicken occurred in 2006, peak milk and wheat occurred in 2004, and peak rice happened back in 1988. Okay. So this is all according to new research from Yale University and Michigan State and some other research outfit in Germany. 1988? There's... Anyway, I've eaten a lot of rice since 1980. I haven't noticed. I think rice is still fairly inexpensive. But anyway, here's the thing about this whole peak whatever, this whole theory. Let me try to explain it to you because many of us are not smart enough to understand this. The Independent tells us that peak production refers to the point at which the growth in a crop, animal, or other food source begins to slow down, rather than the point at which production actually declines. However, it is regarded as a key signal that the momentum is being lost, and it is typically only a matter of time before production plateaus, and in some cases, begins to fall. Although it is unclear how long the process could take. So it's all a bunch of academic hokum. Just academic hokum. You hear how many qualifiers they had in there? It is regarded as a key signal, and typically it's only a matter of time before, in some cases, and it's relatively unclear as to how long the process could take, but we're extremely worried about it. And we're certain that population control and abortion and homosexual marriage is going to save the world. That's what we need. More abortion and gay marriage. Peak food. Scary. All right. So anyway, peak oil, now peak food. And forgive my skepticism. Okay? That's all. Let's move on here. Into the politics file. 60% of job creation in 2014 can be directly traced to the expiration of unemployment benefits. Yes. And this is right from the National Bureau on Economic Research, a think tank in Washington. They've got a new working paper that, and it's amazing. You remember there was the 2013 government shutdown when the Republicans tried to stand up against the Democrats, and they folded up like a cheap suitcase in, I think, 9 or 10 days. I forget. But that standoff led to an abrupt expiration of long-term unemployment benefits. And now the Democrats were howling at the time that the expiration would be disastrous, especially for working families, women, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender especially will be particularly hurt. So they said it'd be a disaster. Well, it turns out that all those people on long-term unemployment, a whole bunch of them went and got jobs. Yes, the working paper, as reported in the Washington Examiner, states that the expiration of long-term unemployment benefits was responsible for the creation of over 1.8 million new jobs. About a million of those people were on long-term unemployment when it ended. And they say about a million people went out and got jobs because they no longer had welfare. See, that's what happens when you end welfare. People think that it's cold-hearted to end welfare, that people are going to starve and they're not going. It's not true. People will work. They'll do better. It's the same with criminal justice. When you say there should be a swift, painful public death penalty for capital crimes, people accuse you of wanting to execute 50,000 people a year. But if we had that, there wouldn't be 50,000 people to execute every year because criminals would stop it because they would be afraid. And if you don't give people welfare, they'll go get jobs and they'll make something of themselves. This is America, for crying out loud. I mean, we can use the wits and the brains and the skill and the gumption that God gave us, and we can take care of ourselves, and we can take care of each other. All right. Now, speaking of welfare, a shocking story, as reported by CBS right here in Denver, a nationwide cell phone company says that they are outraged by multiple examples of fraud and cheating in the Obama phone distribution program. Yes, it's also known as the Lifeline program, and CBS tells us that it's aimed at providing free cell phone service to the poor and the needy, and it handed out over 13 million free cell phone plans in the first 6 months of 2014, and everybody had a collective fuzzy because they felt so good about helping the poor with their cell phones. Now, CBS reminds us that if you own a cell phone, you pay for these free phones with a monthly tax on your cell phone bill. You can look it up. It's called the Universal Service Tax. And Lifeline, this free Obama phone program, has been around since, well, George W. Bush started it, but they don't call them Bush phones. They call them Obama phone because Obama came in and said, "You want to give away phones? I'll show you how to give away phones." George Bush didn't know how to give away phones. I can show you how to give away phones. Now, to qualify for one of these Obama phones, you have to be low income on food stamps, Medicaid, housing assistance, or some other government cheese program. But multiple times, a CBS producer and a reporter found phone agents in Denver circumventing the strict government rules. Strict government rules about handing out free cell phones that will encourage people to vote for you. They have strict rules about that. The strict rule is get as many Obama phones out there as you possibly can. Yeah. And by the way, these vendors who were investigated by these CBS reporters, they receive massive government subsidies to hand out these phones. And the program is rife with fraud. People lying about being poor and getting their free Obama phone. Remember that woman on the TV? I got my Obama phone. I'll never remember that chick. How the Republicans could have lost that election in 2012 is inexplicable. Inexplicable. All right. Now, more from the politics file. Now, this got past me. This actually happened a couple of weeks ago, but I do want to report on this. At the opening of the legislative session in Denver, Colorado, a pastor upset some Democrats when he did the opening prayer. And this is the pastor from Winter Park Christian Church. And in his prayer, he asked the Lord to give lawmakers the courage to vote, quote, "not according to cultural acceptance, but according to what is right before you, God." And a homosexual, Pat Stedman, an openly flaming homosexual, he flipped out. He said the speech that crossed the line. "The morning prayer should not be something that divides us," he said. Well, I mean, a prayer automatically is going to divide the homos from the normal people. I mean, it's bound to happen if you're praying to the true God. Somebody's going to be uncomfortable. And turns out, you know, when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, the one who yelps is the one who got hit. Well, Democrat homo Pat Stedman, by the way, he's a guy, just so you know. Pat, you know, it's somewhat. Anyway, Pat has a husband. Oh, well, Pat had a husband, but Pat's husband died. And Pat's very upset. But he says, I figured out my own solution. And then he doesn't go on to say what that is. It's probably to go in the corner and just fester and be upset and hiss about it. Another Democrat, she was quite upset. She said that the comments in the prayer offended her and others. She said it was tantamount to lobbying on the floor, which she says is not allowed. And Stedman said, yes, he was telling us how to vote. He was telling us how to vote. See, the thing about these liberals and the homos is they know deep down in their heart that they are not right before God. And now they claim, most of these people, they claim they don't even believe in God. But boy, you bring up God or say a prayer to God that's actually a godly prayer, and they absolutely flip out. Because I think deep down in their cold, dark conscience, they know they're not right before God. And this fella from Winter Park Christian Church, he reminded them of that. And they're extremely upset and literally having a hissy fit over it. It's just terrible. Prayer should not divide us. All right, just step over there with that. All right, now, hip-hop mogul Suge Knight. Now, if you've listened to this program, you've heard me talk about these hit and runs. Every day in Denver, somebody is hitting someone with a car and leaving the scene, and I just don't think it used to happen like that. I really don't. It's the last few years, it seems there's an exponential increase in people who are hitting people with their car, maybe killing someone, and then willing to just leave. It's stunning to me that we live in a civilization where this is occurring. And now Suge Knight has been arrested on suspicion of murder after two men were run over, one fatally last Thursday. A homicide detective in L.A. said Knight had an argument on the set of the biopic Straight Outta Compton. That's a film about the rap group N.W.A., he got into an argument with these fellas. So they're doing a biopic about a rap group whose name nobody can say anymore. You can't say that. You know, the first word of their name, you can't say that. I guess it would be N-Words with Attitude. N-Word with Attitude, I think was the name of that band. I don't think they were a band. They were a hip-hop outfit. The police say that it appears that Suge Knight backed over the two men and then ran over them in drive as well, and they are treating it as a homicide. Drove backwards, struck the victims, went forward, struck them again. Now, this story is from the local Fox affiliate here in Denver, and they say that Knight founded the wildly successful Death Row Records in 1991. So to me, that's just a bit subjective. Wildly successful at what? Destroying people's minds and lives? Wildly successful at degrading women? Wildly successful at promoting drug abuse? I mean, sure, he made a lot of money, but to call Death Row Records wildly successful, I think, shows a bias in the media toward just evil. Yeah, they remind us about Suge Knight's notorious career. He was driving the car in which Tupac Shakur was a passenger when Tupac was shot to death in Vegas in 1996. Knight spent several years in prison on assault and weapons convictions, and his wildly successful Death Row Records label went bankrupt in 2006. And then, to add insult to injury, in August of this past year, Suge Knight himself was shot at a party on the Sunset Strip. In October, he was busted for allegedly stealing a photographer's camera. And so none of us are really surprised about Suge Knight, Straight Outta Compton indeed, and his band, N-Word with Attitude, wildly successful at basically lowering the bar on Western civilization. That's the one thing that Suge Knight was successful at, and I hope that he is convicted and swiftly, publicly, and painfully executed for all of his crimes against humanity. Finally, if you thought things were... I mentioned earlier that there's a Bizarro World. Well, this is actually from the Bizarro World file. we have a file now. Bruce Jenner, champion of the 1976 decathlon at the Olympics, is transitioning into a woman. Yeah. You remember him from the Wheaties box, right? We all remember. Well, a source close to the family says that he is finally happy, and his family is accepting of what he's doing. He is transitioning into a woman. He's 65 years old, and he is filming his journey into womanhood to be shared with viewers in a series, a reality series, later this year. This is from People Magazine, who slobber all over Bruce Jenner and his wonderful family, who are so wonderful and accepting of his wonderful transition into wonderful transgenderism. His family, including his six children, the guy's got six kids, they say they're adjusting to the new Bruce. A family friend says that the children of Bruce Jenner are mainly concerned with his happiness. His stepdaughter, Kim Kardashian, aha, now we see. I didn't realize that they were actually... Okay, his stepdaughter, Kim Kardashian, said, quote, "I think, like, everyone goes through things in life, and I think that story and what Bruce is, like, going through, I think he'll share whenever the time is right." That was Kim Kardashian. This is his story, and he wants to tell the world the way he wants, says a source close to the family. The family really wants to empower him to tell his story. So you know what this is? This is a promotion in People Magazine for Bruce Jenner's upcoming reality as he degenerates into mental illness and self-mutilation. They're going to put it on TV. This is a commercial for it. They want to empower him to tell his story, so hopefully he can help other people too. That's the goal. Really? Is that the goal of broadcasting your descent into deranged mental... Is that the goal is to help people? Anyway, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. Thank you very much. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Theology Online, at Denver Bible Church, and at American Right to Life. And as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, I will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.